So I want to start by explaining a little bit about who I am and why I might care about soil health. So I run the Mississippi River Program at the Walton Family Foundation. We share some board members and a home office location in Bentonville, Arkansas, with a large retailer you probably know. But I don't work for Walmart. They have their own foundation, and so I work for the Families Foundation. So as the head of the Mississippi River Program, that means I'm paid to spend all of my time thinking about the health of the river and how to improve it. And the challenge that the foundation has chosen to focus most on is water quality. So that concern about water quality took us pretty directly to working with row crop agriculture. Because you didn't actually tell me about how to move the slide. Oh. So just go down. Okay. So that took us to working with row crop agriculture because, as you probably know, the best data we have suggests that about 60% of the nitrogen and 40% of the phosphorus that is a problem in the Gulf and in the Mississippi River and in our streams and rivers that we drink from in the upper Midwest come from agriculture, from row crop agriculture. So working with agriculture was a natural nexus for the foundation because we always look to try to address issues where we can align environmental and economic outcomes. Initially, several years ago when we started this work, we focused on fertilizer optimization because of that clear economic and environmental alignment. No one, least of all farmers, wants to see expensive fertilizer lost and soil just the same, right? So we also started with a focus on cover crops, but we figured that would be a real long-term push, that we'd only really get traction on cover crops with those who are already identified as sort of sustainable farmers. So in the first several years of this work, that was the key focus, demonstrating the value of practices that could reduce excess nutrient runoff. And we did this work farm by farm through demonstration projects, assuming that we needed to socialize these ideas in the ways that the traditional ways that people go about diffusing knowledge in agricultural communities, engaging early adopters, doing on-farm demonstrations, and using field days as the primary dissemination tool. So we did these demonstration projects, and we sought to assess whether there was enough concern about nutrient pollution to among farmers to get any traction. And much to my surprise, we found ourselves doing work that was really catching on. Frankly, not because of anything we were doing. We just happened to be getting our program on water quality going at the time when this issue was becoming more and more of a concern, and where farmers were increasingly concerned about loss of soil health and flattening of yield curves. So we kept at this, and we saw more and more interest and momentum, and particularly for the cover crops piece. And we found that it wasn't just sustainable farmers, that mainstream farmers were interested in cover crops too. And so eventually it became clear that we needed a new approach and we needed to capitalize on all this excitement. So we revised our strategy to have a dedicated focus on soil health, folding in the work on cover crops and nutrient management with reduced tillage to focus on building organic matter. And at the same time, we realized that we needed to explore different ways to advance this work. It was time to stop working farm by farm and start figuring out how we scale up. As I told my board, there are more than 100 million acres of row crops in the Mississippi Basin, and no traditional approach to spreading practices was going to get us to really improve water quality even over the next 20 years. So we have a new hypothesis. We have a new hypothesis that by working with public and private partners, many of whom are in the room, we can use the supply chain work with a little bit of policy work to scale up impact. But we just approved the strategy in August, so it'll be a while before I can say much about the efficacy. But I want to talk to you today about the component parts. So as advertised in the talk name, we're going to talk about the supply chain. In the last few years, supply chain efforts to improve environmental outcomes in agriculture have begun to really emerge and take hold. These projects follow in the footsteps and build on the lessons learned in efforts to improve sustainability in seafood and forestry. This slide gives you a sense of, This slide gives you a representation of the supply chain for grains. As you know, it starts with ag input suppliers who sell seed and fertilizer to farmers and goes downstream to food companies and retailers, covering everyone in between, including the farmers themselves, most importantly. So what we've seen developing are some signals, mostly from the retailers and the food companies, that they'd like to see grains grown more sustainably, primarily because of the emissions associated with fertilizer, as many of these consumer-facing companies have made sustainability claims focused on reducing greenhouse gases. So I don't want to make it sound like it's only coming from retailers. Others in the supply chain are working on sustainability commitments, but the ones who are really focused on changing farmers' work to date has been, not surprisingly, coming from the more consumer-facing ends of the chain. So that signal is beginning to trigger a reaction. First, to figure out how to get grains that are grown more sustainably, and second, how to prove that those grains are grown more sustainably so that they can count in relation to their sustainability goals. And that's what I want to talk about now, these two issues. How do we really make this happen? And what role does a foundation like mine play in trying to make something like that happen? So when we started to think about this, we really said we have to go learn from what seafood and forestry did, both of whom really were driven in large part by philanthropy. And what we learned from that is that we should be first and foremost focused on how to make sure that the metrics that are being used to show that crops are being grown more sustainably are really meaningful, that they're based on strong data, that they're verified by outside experts, and that there's a system to make sure that the data is collected is utilized to make the metrics better over time. In short, we feel like we want to be investing in improving the rigor in the system to make sure it functions to produce the environmental outcomes on the ground and in the water, because that's what we really care about. So how does that work? Are you coming back?
No. Yes, how about?
Okay. To date, these supply chain efforts have focused on developing tools that help farmers benchmark their environmental performance in relation to key metrics. The seven that field to market, the biggest one of these initiatives are using, are up there. These tools allow farmers to put all their location-specific data, to put in all their location-specific data, and then to return feedback on how that farmer compares to other farmers growing the same crops in a similar area. Over time, as farmers make changes to improve fertilizer efficiency or to start growing row crops, these improvements could be captured. These could be captured as improvements in performance against the metrics tracked by the tool. So this is great in theory, but what I want to emphasize is that we're still really early in this process, and there's still much to figure out how to make sure that these metrics really work. As you all know, agriculture is a complex process, physically, chemically, and biologically, and it turns out that to measure what's going on in relation to the environment is not all that easy. So the metrics, some of these metrics have proved really hard to pin down. One of them that's been really difficult is water quality, and that's, of course, the one that we care the most about. It turns out that without spending a lot of money to actually measure, to actually instrument farms, it's very difficult to come up with a good system that helps farmers assess their impact on water quality, and even more difficult to do what we would like beyond that, to figure out a way to give farmers that feedback in relation to how they stand in their watershed. But, you know, frankly, this has been a tough nut to crack for everyone. So we're still working on a really good water quality metric. Some of the other environmental indicators, like the ones for greenhouse gases, are a little bit easier, and they're being piloted in sites around the country. But there is still work to be done to figure out how this all adds up to actual environmental impact, how it's more than just putting numbers into a calculator and returning a value. To ensure there's environmental impact, those other sustainability efforts that I said we tried to learn from, seafood and forestry, they've focused on certification. Once the resource is being managed according to the principles, then the products that produce are certified. And the customer can go and choose to buy certified wood at Home Depot, or they can go buy certified seafood at Lund's. But certification systems require two things that don't seem to be a good fit for commodity agriculture. First, requires traceability, meaning that the products maintain their identity throughout the supply chain, not an inexpensive venture. And second, most certification systems also require a price premium to differentiate the sustainably produced product from the regular product. And to date, no one is stepping forward to pay much of a premium for conventionally grown corn and soybeans that are grown in a more sustainable fashion. So commodity agriculture is taking another path to explore a concept called continuous improvement as a way to make sure that the approach actually results in environmental benefits. On the face of it, continuous improvement seems intuitively obvious. This year is better than last year is better than the one before. But how do we really prove that out using the tools we have? That's a lot more challenging. How do we set standards around continuous improvement when growing conditions vary so much from year to year? We want to encourage farmers to adapt and optimize efficiency, but what does that mean when fertilizer usage, for example, could be quite different based on external conditions year to year? So that work remains to be done to define continuous improvement and experiment with how we bring it to scale. So, okay, if rigorous metrics are one area that we're focused on, the second would be figuring out how to translate that demand signal I was talking about to farmers and to those who advise them in a way that the signal can be understood and in a way that it can be met. Astoundingly enough, it turns out that there's more to improving sustainability than someone in Bentonville, Arkansas saying make it so. But don't tell any of my bosses I said that. So we've been exploring a number of ways to help transmit that signal. As you know, there's a lot of reasons change in agriculture is challenging. And all those reasons make it hard to transmit that signal. But to keep it simple, I think it's really mostly about diversity. We have physically diverse landscape, even in places that seem homogeneous. That diversity in the landscape engenders diverse approaches to farming from, you guessed it, farmers who are themselves diverse. So there's no cookie cutter approach to pursuing that, to pushing that demand signal through the supply chain. How farmers adopt new approaches is different depending on who they rely on for advice, what their cultural context is, what financial obstacles they face, and a million other things too numerous to list. So we are funding NGOs to develop pilot projects. These pilots include the companies, but they also include local partners who have experience on the ground. And together, they are experimenting with what it looks like to develop these projects in a geographically specific region. Essentially, these pilots provide a structure supported by local partners that the demand signal can articulate with, that something can come from above and come from below. Another way that we've been looking at to help transmit that demand signal is to engage input suppliers in being ready to deliver conservation expertise and services in order to support farmers in trying new practices. This is another way of trying to build some local knowledge in to articulate with that demand signal. We've approached this work so far by trying to identify and to understand and quantify the business case for offering these services. What's the potential future financial gain for ag retailers selling cover crop seed or providing custom services that improve soil health? And while I would not suggest that we're getting huge success in this area, we have seen a little bit of traction. For example, the work that the Environmental Defense Fund and the Soil Health Partnership are doing with United Suppliers. They've developed a program to help train and support United Suppliers employees on best practices and precision agricultural technologies that can improve soil health. But this work is just getting going, so we'll be watching to see how marketing conservation works for these ag retailers economically over the next few years. Okay, so we need the right metrics and we need a way to communicate the signal through the chain. And there's one more area of grant making that I think is really important to advancing this work. We're doing work to push more companies to make commitments to improve sustainability. Again, if we're going to get this to scale, we need a lot more partners throughout the chain engaged in this issue. So we've been looking at risk in the supply chain for companies that rely on corn and soybeans. And this work has been mildly successful. We found that it's much easier for companies to understand risk related to shortage, like drought, than risk related to externalities, like water pollution. But I think there's a little bit of hope there. And what we decided is that we want to now focus on how to engage companies from the sectors that have a significant impact on the corn and soybean supply chain, but are underrepresented in terms of their sustainability commitments. So we focused first on the protein sector. The challenge there is that these companies are not subject to the same kind of consumer pressure that branded food companies are, because except for niche products, meat is not heavily branded in the supermarket. The other thing that's just like this is ethanol. And it also does not feel much of the consumer pressure. So we're early in the stage of business development to try to figure out how to make the case to these companies that over the long term, having sustainability commitments may pay dividends. Okay, I'm almost done. So those are the three roles that the foundation has been playing in trying to advance supply chain efforts. But there's one more thing I want to talk about, and that's the intersection of the supply chain and policy work. We have a whole bunch of other policy work going on, and I won't talk to you about that today. But I do want to touch on how the role that policy can play in slowing or advancing the supply chain work. And the reason I bring it up is that farm policy, particularly crop insurance, is still really, really important in farmer decision making today. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about the supply chain, but I think that really the number of farmers who would actively identify with participating in a supply chain sustainability initiative is growing, but it's still really small. Whereas the number of farmers that rely on crop insurance as a key part of their cash flow, super high. So as part of this work that we're doing, we're also working to engage the government relations departments of these companies in advocacy to improve the synergy between Farm Bill programs and these efforts. For example, we're concerned about the way that the cover crop termination rules and crop insurance discourage farmers from experimenting with cover crops because they're worried that they might have a claim denied. This is a real worry, right? So the supply chain work has allowed us to educate the companies, to get them engaged in this problem, and then encourage them to call for change alongside the environmental groups. Okay, so I think I've gone on long enough. I promised Nick I wouldn't be too verbose. In concluding, I would just say that this work, both on the supply chain and on the policy work, is exciting. I've been working on the Mississippi River on and off for almost 20 years. Yes, I'm old. And the environmental community has been doing this work in the same way since the early 90s, doing demonstration projects, having field days, and working farm by farm, farmer by farmer. This is the first time that we can even really begin to think about scaling up impact, to have any real impact on the rivers and streams in the upper Midwest, on the Mississippi itself, and ultimately on the Gulf. Okay, thank you.